Welcome back. Just let me read two of these WhatsApp messages since we have a whole set here. This one is directed to Sanka Price. In your efforts to be nonpartisan, you're being ridiculous. Thank you. This next one. Last night up to 7 o'clock, the children who ran at sports were at the dark bus stop by Waterford waiting for a bus. No bus. When the bus came, it passed them all. I want to say to the parents, please pick up your children. Do not leave your little children out so late after dark. Please, did you ever see children falling down because they did not eat for 4 hours? So this person is very concerned about that, and maybe it's something to look at. It's 10:54. Let's go back to the phone lines. You're on the air. Good morning. This is Brass Tacks.
Good morning to you, Mr.
Patrick. Mr. Patrick King.
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
I am well, and I just read a note that you say some of the most horrible things on Facebook. Don't even try it here. Make your point, sir. Make your point. Make your point.
Mr. Price,
don't even respond to that. Make your point.
I want to thank Rezzy first for coming to my defense. But Rezzy know me well enough that I am very much capable of defending myself, and I will do so whenever the time comes. But what I want to say in response to the WhatsApp message is that every single name that I refer to any individual either in this administration or any person I speak to on any of my live Facebook page, I can substantiate. Mr. Price, there's something that you must know about me that I must tell you. I will never dare venture to speak on a topic or to make utterances to anything to which I cannot substantiate. My training does not allow me to do it. I said over and over, and I will say it in closing to you this morning, every single thing that I've said on all of my live broadcasts on my Facebook page, I can substantiate. In my possession are 20 sworn affidavits of persons who came forward and gave me information relative to spanning across 6 government ministries in this country. And at the appropriate time, I will make them available to every single Barbadian who wants to view and see them, that they will know that I don't have the time.
Have you received any lawsuits as yet?
I didn't hear that.
Have you received any lawsuits as yet?
No, I'm still waiting, because that is the place I really want to get, because that will give me the opportunity to do the things that I really would like to do. So I'm hoping that somebody could have the statistical fortitude to make the mistake and bring me before the law courts for any defamation or anything that I've said in my videos, because I will have the opportunity.
All right, sir. Make your point. I'm sure you didn't call here to talk about that. Make your point.
No, but I really want to say that, and then I will speak. Then, since you want me to make another point, then I will speak then to the issue of the St. John's seat. I'm taken back by the comments of Mara Thompson, simply because that Gerson Carter interviewed Mara Thompson on her arrival at the parliament one morning. And in that interview, a number of things were said according to Gerson Carter's report. I must rely on Gerson Carter's report, because the Nation came forward and said that they will support Gerson Carter, and they made reference to her style and the time that she spent on the job as a journalist. So I would rely on her report. And Gerson Carter carried the story. Now, Mark Thompson gave the impression that Gerson Carter had cast a dark shadow over the Nation newspaper and called into question the judgment of the press by the article that was published. Now, we have learned yesterday that the same Mark Thompson has now broke the race, and George Pilgrim is now the new candidate for St. John. Read between the lines, Barbadians. We now know who was truthful and who was not truthful. That's all I will say in relation to that.
All right, sir. Thank you very much for calling. Have a great day. Good morning, Mr. Price. What guarantee do you have? What guarantee do you have that the Prime Minister will call an election by June? If he doesn't, then what? I await your comment. All I will say to you, WhatsApp writer, is that constitutionally, we are supposed to have an election within the next 90 days, and that the Prime Minister is the Prime Minister, and I respect him as that. And if he says that will happen, I will believe him. We go to the next call. This is Brass Sacks.
Morning, Mr.
Good morning.
Bray.
Yes, good morning.
How are you
doing? I am well.
All right. No, I want to do with 3 points.
My Blue Horizon man, you're done with the Blue Horizon
yes,
one time.
Yes, I want to do with 3 points. And I'm going to be very straight and sharp.
You usually are.
So let me try to address the one that you spoke about, the economy. Mm-hmm. I know Jesus Christ, he went down here, he did parables that the average man could understand. Now, the 3 points I want to do is the one you spoke about, the economy, the dissolution of parliament, and the, for the first time, I will deal with the sewage project. So let me give you a little bit on what I feel about the economy. You went to school and I went to school. You remember when we were at primary school and you're differentiating between a duck and a chicken? You remember what the teacher would tell you about the duck?
No, you remind me.
The duck, they said, had a web between enabled it to swim.
Yes, that's true, yes, yes.
The chicken never had it. Mm-hmm. Now, let me talk about the economy. The Democratic and the Labour Party, I will call the Barbados Labour Party the duck, and the Democratic Labour Party the chicken. When the master throw water in the duck pond, the duck is able to walk the yard and yet swim. The chicken can't swim. The LP already told you they don't deal with the economy. So don't make the sense deal with the economy because they can't swim. The water in the pool is like the economy. They call it run around the pool, but they can't get in. And the Prime Minister outlined that when he called the economists. He told the economists that they are like a blind man in a dark room looking for a black cat. So don't make sense talking about the economy under the Democratic Labour Party administration, which has now been dissolved. So you can't talk about the economy because you ain't get now go because they can't get in the pond. They don't know nothing about the economy. So it's obvious that the economy will go like this. Now let me deal with the dissolution of
Parliament. Just let me clarify something that you said. You said haven't just been dissolved. It's the House of Assembly.
The House of Assembly
has been dissolved.
And says that's what
the ministers are still in place, okay?
That's where I want to get to this point. Now, since yesterday, everybody is querying about the 90 days, and people believe that the 90 days should be there for emergency. Now, if I remember my politics very well, in order to be a minister, you have to be in the upper house or the lower house, right or wrong.
Yeah, but there's a provision. I know you're going with this.
Let me finish. Because naturally speaking, there is a lot of practices that are not right. Mm-hmm. And that is what I said from the beginning. This government is the government of the Governor General. The day that Parliament opens, the previous Governor General said, my government. So I believe this is a point in time where the Governor General, and I call into Mayor Motley, get a constitutional lawyer. Let us understand whether or not, in the absence of Parliament, it means there are no members of Parliament. MP means member of Parliament, but it could also mean money and pension, right? So what I am saying, with the absence of Parliament and that signature or that form of MP is no longer in existence, because you can't call them members of Parliament because there's no Parliament. I want to know if it wouldn't be fair that since you've gone into these 90 days, the onus will not be on the Governor General to appoint an executive to oversee the spending of money. Because all these politicians will be doing right now, they can't draft the law, they can't do anything pertaining to the legal rights of the country, apart from overseeing money spent. And I believe they are not in position to do such. It should be an executive body named by the Governor General. That is sufficient for that. Now, let me go on to the sewer system. And this is the first time, and I hope this is the last time, that I was making any mention of the sewer system. I listened on all sides, and I heard people critical. It did not built to carry that amount of volume of sewage. Some said it need maintenance. But if you maintain a vehicle that is carrying 6 tons of weight, continuously it would last. But if you add 20 tons, it means the capacity need more. Now let me give you a draft illustration. Where vision and politics is necessary. And I lay this clearly on the shoulders of the Barbados Labour Party. Let me get this right out of here. You can remember the Cricket World Cup?
Yes.
The Barbados Labour Party was visionary, although it didn't work out their way. They knew an influx of people was coming into the island, and they made provisions, right or wrong. They even had a boat with staying outside the waters to accommodate in case this influx of people came. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
You could recall the highway by Tom Adams. The building of the cement plant caused a road to come from what you would consider the clear. The clear in St. Andrew straight to the plant because the plant would be there and accommodation was made to accommodate those trucks. Now, this is where I take a problem with the Barbados Airport, not having any vision. Their onus is on tourism. You would hear the Minister of Tourism come on the air and tell you how much additional rooms will be built at Sandals, how much additional rooms will be at Blue Horizon. But he never decided to discuss with his minister how much additional waste will be placed on our system. With the influx of all of these different people, where was the vision? To realize, if you know that that plant didn't carry so much sewage, do you expect when the people come here, they didn't have more extraordinary sewage, Mr. Price?
Well, how I'll answer you is that, I don't know if you listened to Sunday Brass Tax Sunday. I had here the engineer, the Barbados Association of Professional Engineers, and one of the points that Lieutenant Colonel Brown, the president, was making repeatedly was that there's a need to set up a body of professionals that would look after the infrastructure of the country. And they would be the ones to make decisions on how to basically help develop the country, because they would have a comprehensive look at it rather than let politicians make those decisions, since politicians make decisions based on what is better suited for their constituents or their particular interests at the time. And what bothers me, well, not really bothers me because I recognize why it happens, but it upsets me because I think that we need to mature as a democracy and as a people to recognize that when we go to places like the United States and Canada and England and parts of Europe, Western Europe, that is, you can see the level of development that takes place. And it's not what some of the politicians would have done, but it is because there are these professional associations, or rather the government would have ceded authority to some body that looks after things like infrastructure and whatnot. So you have this continuing development that takes place irrespective of which administration is in power. And I think we need to get to that. I think the problem is that, you know, we're a small country, and therefore everybody likes to pound their chest and say, I did this and I did that. But the reality is that we really have to look in terms of our development, that we need to have a nonpartisan body to do that. That's my thoughts about it. A lot of people disagree. I really don't care. But as I said, those are my thoughts about it.
So we end up that the tourism minister bragging by the amount of visitors, but yet he didn't make provisions for storage system to accommodate the visitors. So this is really democratically a priority score zero. And my eyes, as far as visionary thinking is concerned, you load up the system, and they had nowhere to put the system. They had nowhere to put the storage. So on that note, I finish with that, and I believe anybody with a molecule of common sense will know that the Democratic Labor Party bring in the Sanders and bring in the next body, and did not look at the most important part, and that is sewage system. Thank you, Sanger.
Okay, sir. Just let me read this one here. Good morning. I used to think it was price gouging until I got into business. This man is responding to the elderly gentleman who called early and talked about the amount of the differences in prices. And the gentleman saying, as I said, I used to think it was price gouging until I got into business. What people do not understand is how goods are bought. If I buy my goods for, let's say one dozen of particular item, and the other person buys three or four dozen, his purchasing price would be a lot less than mine. Therefore, his selling price can and may be lower than mine. And he's saying that this is what happens, and this is why we have this differential in pricings. And I have this another one here that I want to read for you, which I think is pretty interesting. How come Mia Motley is said to be power hungry when we have a prime minister who has held on to power longer than any other prime minister in our political history, despite the fact that every day the general elections is delayed, sees Barbados's economic situation become more dire? Interesting question, and I'm sure you're going to get some reaction to this. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, hey, good morning.
Well, perfect.
What happened? What do you know? What did they not do?
Good morning, sir. One of my favorite caller.
Oh, dear. There you go. Man, this is not good, man. You know, you guys patronizing this thing and got me feeling uncomfortable now.
Tell me something. You want to respond to this WhatsApp message? How come Mia Motley is said to be power hungry when we have a prime minister who has held on to power longer than any other prime minister in our political history, despite the fact that every day the general election is delayed, sees Barbados's economic situation become more dire? Would you like to respond to that, sir?
I don't know. I don't like that. That's a BLP, DLP thing. As far as I'm concerned, they can fight it out amongst themselves. And leave
it's a Barbados thing, sir.
It's not. As a
party. It is a Barbados thing because you hear what you said. I remember back in 1991, the general election. That I thought that was really, really interesting. I remember hearing Erskine Sandford-Nelson Lloyd making the point about Henry Ford, now Sir Henry, and the late Dr. Richie Haynes were being power hungry. And they were telling untruths about the IMF, et cetera, et cetera. And within 6 months after winning the election, we were in the hands of the IMF. But these guys were power hungry and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So I can also tell you that I've heard Justin Bowe, in every other election, the government saying about the opposition that they're power hungry. I remember Mr. Owen Arthur made the statement calling the then opposition Democrat Labour Party under David Thompson well boys, and that they're just power hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
I'm gonna try and sound like sleepy. Why you feel like I could get involved in politics? I'd be on the air, but I don't think that I want to be in charge of all that power. Huh? We burn it? Huh? We all want power. You know, that's, I don't think I quote it word for word, but that you're going back to 1970, 80 something. You know, come on, let's be fair, man.
For about 1991.
People get involved with politics and public life and take all the beating in public, and, you know, they get their lives exposed.
What is your beef today, my friend?
You see, you asked me to respond. Now you tell, oh, God.
No, but I didn't even know you responded.
Sorry, good.
I didn't even realize you were responding. Sorry about that. Come on, I respond.
You say
I forget you don't talk in a straight line.
I get straight, man. Sorry, man. Every time I laugh at you, it's infectious. You know what I mean? It make it why you get less angry and more in in line with
my friend. Life is short.
Life is short. It's quite right. You got a foundation, right? Apparently.
Yes, sir.
that's where you and Peter and everybody's got this little this coming together now.
No. Huh? Well, look, let me put this with you. Okay, if we want to go down there, let me go down there. All right? The Prime Minister of this country
the Prime Minister
was also there. The Chief Justice was also from Foundation.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Roy is also from Foundation. Okay?
All right, fair enough.
And I can name a whole bunch of other people also went to school there. So don't. Peter would be a youngster to me.
so he's a youngster, okay, fair enough. But he's an old man to me, apparently, so I don't know. I met him a couple of times. You see, older than me, I could be wrong. You never tell me his age. But here's the thing, my man. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing, all right? Now, all right, you say the problem is economics. I say it's more governance because governance supersedes economics when it comes to, you know, the solving of an influential problem. Mm-hmm. You solve one, you automatically solve the other. If you solve the problem of economics, like putting a plaster over the issue, if you solve the problem of governance, economics fall completely in line.
And part of that
governance issue has to deal with the role of the central bank. Mm-hmm. Now, it's all very well and good for the central bank governor to come and speak.
The former.
Mm-hmm. I say all these fancy stuff and stuff thing. But one of the flaws of the so-called governance model that we have, indeed, as Mr. Wesley was saying, is that the governor of the central bank, the role of governor, reports directly, not on a dotted line anymore, into the Minister of Finance. And unfortunately, that becomes the case because he's under contract. When he was a civil servant, he was reporting more or less to the head of the civil service, if I got what his or her name is, her, I believe, her name is. But now that he's under contract, he reports directly into cabinet. So, you have a problem. If you really want to fix this economic problem, like what about considering options like, you know, having Barbados join the OECS? Because they don't have that problem, you know.
They can't. They can't.
They
can't get that problem.
They can't have that problem because all the ministers of finance are separate. You know, the Constitution provides for the separation of powers between the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary. Mm-hmm. You know, it should also provide for the central bank governor. He should be reporting to the Minister of Finance. That is problem number one. He should be like a police person, you know, the go-to when it comes to solving and ensuring that the public is protected from some of these nincompoops that make policy. No, you know, truth be told, the OECS still have their difficulties, mm-hmm. but the protection of the 2-to-1 peg, or no, it's not 2-to-1 in their case.
278-to-1.
Right.
278-to-1. 234, you think?
Yeah, depending which way you look at it. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not one of the issues to contend with because that is done separately in this thing from the, you know, the policy setting of each individual country. Mm-hmm. We should be part of the OECS, but not skip a barrel. He and I there. No, man. If you got to be part of the OECS, I got to be Prime Minister.
And you tell me about going back? You tell me about looking back in years?
No, but...
That goes back to the little eight, the whole debate of the little eight.
The little nine. Yeah. The reality is that one from 10 equals zero, that left nine really.
No, that's Federation. Federation is something different.
I know, but then you left with nine, and then one fella said, if you want me included, I got to be Prime Minister. That dropped it to eight. So that we are out. And unfortunately, those decisions are affecting us today because we are stuck with the same back and forth, the same Labour parties, with the same stupid policy. You know the man says, sell home 1,100 people? Are you being serious?
Who's this?
The same ex-central bank governor. No,
it wasn't 1,100. No. He's saying that you should retrench 1,500. Same thing. Retrench 1,500 a year for 3 years, which is 4,500 people.
Oh, good God. Are you? Listen, okay, here's the thing.
How much were sent home in 2013? According to the unions, it was close to 6,000.
Right. They said 35 and it was closer to 6, but then they went and reemployed even more. Look, here's the thing.
Don't we move on so fast? The point that I'm making there is that what the central bank governor is saying, former central bank governor is saying, what Dr. DeLisle is saying, let's call him Mr. Whirl, Dr. Whirl. What he's saying basically is, you retrench these people, you give them a good package. He quoted in a figure, I think it's about $50,000 or $60,000 per person. Financing, he explained how that financing could be done, etc. But the key thing would be is that you right size your ministries.
Right. Okay.
So in other words, he's not just pulled a number from the top of his head, he's actually given a rationale for
right.
this.
But you got to drill down, because who is he sending home? If he sends home people who are maintenance workers, that means the roads will look even worse. If he sends home people who are protecting people's lives on the coast guards, as it did 3 years ago, that means people will probably drown. If he sends home policemen who are already understaffed by 527 people, that means you're going to have more crime knocking about the place because less policing. Who are you going to send home? Reality is, when government, the biggest difficulty is a bulk of the money is spent on administration and consultants. You've got a lot of people in government making a lot of money and doing practically nothing. To my mind, government should be operational. Once you get paid with taxpayers' money, you should be doing something. Of course, you need some level of supervision. But when you got tiers upon tiers of supervision and consultancies and stuff, you have a lot of wastage. I don't want to send home nobody. I don't even think anybody should be sent home. But you got to start checking on them salaries, man, and how they're doing. In fact, truth be told, look, a cabinet minister, we got 20 of them. And what do you call this? Parliamentary secretary. 20 of them.
Oh, okay. You include the parliamentary secretary,
yeah,
right?
Yes, because it's the same salary went down. It's the same 14
salary. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in reality is, that one man is equivalent to three policemen or three nurses. So what I'm thinking, the more you send home of them there, the more people can be replaced. You know, you have a greater opportunity, perhaps, to employ more operational staff. We need more school teachers, for argument's sake. We need better paid school teachers. As far as I'm thinking, as I was saying to the guys last week, we should be employing about another 100 lawyers to defend people in magistrate court that were paid for by taxpayers. We could employ them and pay them what the doctors are paid, because the doctors in the public service are not very well paid anyway. But they are happy to do the job. So we could pay lawyers the same amount of money to do the kind of work that doctors are doing for the public and go forward that way. But we got too many tiers of administration. Now, I'm not saying sending them people home. Don't send home nobody. But start cutting back on them. You see, we had a constitutional change about, 15 years ago with Mr. Trotman. When it was done, said that the public service salary cannot be cut. Anymore to his disadvantage, or can it be adjusted that way? But I think that government or cabinet should have that freedom to adjust the public servant salary down in case of times of austerity and return them to normalcy when times are better. That freedom should still be available. And I'm talking about the salaries of the top tier. You know, bring them down when necessary and carry them back up, because you work in the public service with a sense of sacrifice. You have a tenure. You don't really lose your job. You're safe till you retire. I think with that should come some kind of sacrifice. You should be able to say, you know something, Bob, this really can't afford to pay me right now, so I will take a haircut. And then come forward again. That is how I see the public service working. But this notion of sending home people, man, you got to be serious. You cannot be serious. Because every person you send home is a consumer. You're thinking about, okay, this dynamic private sector.
When you reduce people's salary like that, too, that
yeah, but you need to
reduce
the salary of one or two people as opposed to a whole 1,300 per year, cutting it completely out. Every person has employed.
Clearly,
every person is a consumer.
But
everyone.
Clearly, from the discussion that we're having here, it is something that we need to discuss as a country. We need to have this national consultation is something that I believe in, and we have
but
to
it
do
hasn't
this.
Happened yet. We had a national
that doesn't
consultation.
Mean, that
when
does,
it came
that
to
it does not mean it can't happen.
But I don't know if it'll ever happen in my lifetime, because quite frankly, the way these two parties have been operating so far is about, I got 5 years and government is like it or lump it. That is how it has been.
All right, my friend. Anyhow.
Clearly, but when you have a comment,
I gotta run. This is Brass Tax. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. You're on the air. We take a commercial break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Brass Tax. It's 11:26. Remember, we take a break at 11:55 for the regional roundup, and then at 12:30 for the latest. You're on the air. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning to you. How are you doing, sir?
I am fine, thank you, sir.
Let me lower my radio. I want to say,
this is Mark.
It is, sir.
I was saying I haven't heard you in about a week or so.
I think, thank you. One of the things about me, I stay off because whenever I call the call-in program, I'm supposed to have positive results. And I think people expect this of me, and regardless of what others may think, I feel pleased with my contribution. This morning, thank you, I believe I'm going to have to ask you to hold back and let me get an answer to these questions elsewhere. But first, before I go into that, I want to ask the people at NCC, if they are aware of the condition and the deteriorating situation of Bridgetown, which they're responsible for. For example, right in the taxi stand there opposite Trident House, disgraceful. You could tie a cow there. You could tie sheep there. The grass is so tall, if you see the grass and not the taxis. I wonder when they're going to go to that. If you look at Jubilee Gardens, sir, and you realize the grime, the stuff, the dirt in Jubilee Gardens, you ask yourself if this is being maintained by a conservation that's supposed to be getting the money from government. You look again at Independence Square, and you ask yourself, is this supposed to be a replica of what Bridgestone's supposed to be, and a former prime minister, or is this supposed to be a kind of a dirty hall? I am calling on the people at National Housing, the manager of National Conservation, the manager, the supervisor, all of them, go and see what is happening in Bridgestone as far as the taxi stand is concerned, as far as Jubilee Gardens is concerned, and as far as Hewitt Square is concerned. And I'm sure it's a disgrace. The people who are listening to me this morning, pass and see for yourself. It's a disgrace to have a city looking like that. No. Mr. Price, I would ask you to let me corner a gentleman. I'm asking Ezra Allen, attorney at law, if he could follow these answers for us as far as this session or that last session of Parliament was concerned. Now, you and I know that when you become a member of Parliament here in Barbados, you actually automatically become a member of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. Most of the parliamentarians are members, so which means we still adopt the parliamentary, the Commonwealth Westminster system. And since we adopt the Westminster system, then we have to respect it. You would realize that sometime back we had a celebration in Barbados in relation to our association with the Commonwealth. Now, I'm going to ask these questions. If you have ministers of government who laid on the floor of Parliament, who tore lies away from the floor of Parliament, isn't this a breach of what the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association is all about? That I have seen, and you've seen, former members of Parliament, Britain and all across Australia, being pulled away from Parliament because of their behaviour. And here we have got a country where we have got parliamentarians who lied morning, noon and night. They lied so much that they get so comfortable telling lies, they don't know when to tell the truth. But they're members of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. We are members of the Commonwealth Parliamentary Association. And these same people are now about to ask you to come and vote for them. Mr. Ezra Allen, I'm asking you these questions. If you could come and justify what is the position as far as members of Parliament in Barbados, even though we do not adopt, we should be adopting the Commonwealth system. Why are nothing being done about it? Secondly, Mr. Allen, I'm asking you, if the 90 days that have been granted, if we check from yesterday and we go all the way up until June, you will see the Prime Minister is within his rights to have 90 days. So if he calls the election the first week in June, somewhere along the line, you cannot question him. So those of us who are pestering him, because he has to go as good as gone. So why should we reward how long he's there? Because he knows he's going. He knows he's going better than you or I. So, Mr. Allen, I'm asking you, if the Prime Minister doesn't have a right, and I know he has a right, to go up until the first week in June because he has a 90-day period, and the 90-day start as of yesterday. Mr. Allen, if you don't mind, would you please come and let Barbados understand fully that as far as the Prime Minister is concerned, he's exercising his rights. We will exercise our rights when the time comes. So give him a chance. Whether he calls it tomorrow, whether he calls it next week, or he decides to call it in June.
All right, Mark, you're on a platform. I give you a lot of latitude, but you're on a platform, and you know me on that.
Let me come off of that then.
Please.
I'm saying the message has gone across. The message has gone across that somewhere along the line, if I can get the answers in the public of Barbados, because Ezra Allen has a program called Ask Me. I think you're aware of that.
But he was on the program of The Nation. The Nation has a program, Ask Me Anything. And in that program, The Nation outlines a range of things that they're doing. And it's a very, very interesting program. You can watch it on Facebook at any time. And Mr. Allen was on, I think yesterday or day before, I can't remember which day it was, and where he outlined this whole thing about what this 90-day period means, okay, from a constitutional perspective.
So which means, Mr., that the Prime Minister has his rights to
yes,
go the full 90 days?
Yes, he is within his constitutional right. The government right. is within their constitutional right to do this.
I also want to express a belief I have. I may be ignorant of what I'm saying, but a lot of people seem to think that way. But I read, right? And if you took this, if you took the estimates last month, and you realize that certain parts of the estimates were voted for, the estimates was passed, then does it give the government or the people who are interim government or those who are performing as a government the right to make decisions because they're part of that vote? So here it is, you vote for X amount of money to go for health. You go for, vote for X amount of money to go for education. And you vote. So by the time a new government is formed in Barbados, there's a possibility that there will be some subtractions from that vote. Do you feel so, Mr. Standpoint?
But we know that that is going to happen. Come on.
So here it is, though, that a government going into office realize now that somewhere along the line that the spend power has been reduced because of this government does not have any time to go for a budget. So as to say, as far as they're concerned,
well, the estimates is really the budget, you know. I mean, you know, that thing that we go through about what the government is doing here and there. I mean, really, you know, it's more ceremonial than anything else. But the reality is that when you go through the estimates at the end of the year and you've apportioned X or Y or Z to the particular ministries, I mean, that is it.
Let me make a comment
The budget that the Minister of Finance has later in the year basically just looks at some of the things that the government would prioritize. But it gives him a chance to have a political speech, because that's what it really is.
Let me break it down to my shopkeeper level. Yes, you are perfectly right in what you've said, but I am a shopkeeper. I order groceries from the merchant. The merchant, by right, send the groceries at wholesale price to me. I then have to turn and make a retail price to get my merchandise sold. So technically, if you have a certain amount of spend power, then it's obvious that the Minister of Finance have to find a way of getting back in some money to run this country. So that's my elementary way of doing it. That, yes, you have the estimates. Yes, you have a situation that he has to put on prices to get back in some money. So whether you think about the estimates is this or the estimates is that, we depend on what we call whether there be an increase or decrease as far as the budget is concerned. And this government can't do it. They don't have the time to do it. They don't have the time. I say to you, and I'm closing, I'm calling on, as I said earlier, I'm calling on the staff and the supervisors of NCC to take my foolish comment and go and see how Bridgetown look.
All right, Mark, thank you for your contribution. I want to tell you here now that someone just wrote, good day, Mark Williams is spot on about the condition of the city. I, too, am appalled at the condition. We surely can do better. So, Mark, that's some support for you on WhatsApp. It's 11:35. We go back to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm cool. There's 3 things I want to talk about. I'm trying to make it as short as possible. One, transport board in the situation that's in. I will let the public know it's not the fault of the drivers, nor the supervisors.
So let me stop you a minute. Are you associated in some way with the transport board, or were associated with the transport board in some way? I don't know if I'm
what exposing. You I don't normally ask a question with a question. Where's your revenue?
No, because I noticed that it is the one topic that your voice.
What should they talk
always
about?
No. I'm not dissuading you in any way. But it seems to be a very keen interest that you have, and you usually bring some keen insight into the whole matter of transport. So I'm just wondering, what was your involvement in transport matters?
One, I hate to see people being at disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Right? True, no fault of their own.
Yeah, okay.
That's one, and that's the main reason.
Okay.
Right? Now,
you go right ahead. I'm sorry to interrupt you just now, but
no problem.
Right,
my apologies, because I was beginning to think the wrong way, so my apologies for that. Should have given you a chance to explain from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Ministry of Public Works have had license and authority for years. They're part of traffic section for years. No system is picture perfect. But I can tell you, what is happening now is the worst ever that I've ever seen with public transportation. And it's all because of something called the Transport Authority. From the time that came about, everything has been going wrong.
Why? What is your estimation that this is happening?
And I think it is purposely done, and the facts are there. You know, I would like to come in the studio now with Michael Lashley, Pandora, and Linton. Only me. And I have to ask the questions that I pose to them.
Okay, stop
it. I am very serious about this, you know.
I want you right now. You are on the air. Could you give us at least three questions that you would like to pose to the Minister of Transport and Works or to the Chairman of the Transport Authority?
One, this is to the Minister, and this for all of them. As a Minister responsible for transportation, a business that have been in the red for years, who have had a few productive routes, I would like to know from that Minister, why have you flooded those routes, especially the Spicetown bypass, with competition to further deplete whatever earnings that was being achieved by Transport Board. Every minibus load I see is money going away from Transport Board. And by that happening, you are putting the jobs of those drivers at risk, because if you are in charge of a business and you keep on losing money, you're not going to give your staff an increase in salary. You're going to try to reduce the staff. The next thing that can possibly happen is another increase in bus fares, or both.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They have areas in Barbados that are poorly serviced, don't have any transportation. The first thing you need to do, Sanka, is to clean house. That's the very first thing. Because you're going to move in an apartment and set up a table where you're going to eat at a dirty table, you're going to clean house. That's the first thing that needs to be done. And for this to happen, I personally think that all boards that are attached to government should be done away with. All government agencies that have boards attached to them, there's always problems. The minister creates the board. He's not going to put the majority opposition members there. He's going to put his people that don't realize how dangerous this thing is, you know. It's putting people at an advantage. Transport Board have... Let me tell you something goes on. Transport Board is so short of workers, right? That when a bus now and is going into the yard, the supervisor go on the street to get that bus. You have buses on Mangrove with the bellies out. I mean, the engines go up there and see for yourself. Don't take my word for it. Go out there. People talk about Weymouth. Go to Mangrove. Go there and see.
All right, you gave me country. You asked one question. You want to ask two more?
You know, we're late. This is a question. This is why we're late. To see the Transport Authority out of existence. That is what
Why? Explain yourself. But explain yourself. What have they done, or what, in your view, they have not done enough
they
of?
They are destroying the Transport Board. That is what
how
they are
so?
Doing. Yeah, people say that the
how
minister
so?
Don't know what we're doing. He knows
so?
What we're doing. He knows what he's doing.
But how have they destroyed the Transport Board?
I just tell you, Sanka.
You're saying they're giving lucrative routes to minibuses and ZRs. Basically, that's the first thing, correct?
Yeah.
Good. What else?
But that's the main thing. That's the main thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, you should always try to nip. No, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that there's not room for... When I mentioned about cleaning hostel, we have had a PSV situation going on in a very negative way for years.
A what?
A PSV situation. There's a lot of good workers out there, Sanka. A lot. But you know the Barbados mentality. They can see the minibus man. They can see Zara man. They're going to see Zara, Zay. They're going to put all in one basket, which is wrong. So the thing is to get rid of all the bad ones. Get rid of them now.
So when you say clean house, you mean get rid of all the PSV people who are giving trouble. What do you think of the ministers of a number of ministers of government speaking over the last few days in Parliament, they made the point that they think that the operators of the private concessionaires should get duty-free status so that they can bring in newer buses and better quality buses. What do you think of that?
Initially, I was against it. Initially, right? But as you explained to me on a previous program prior to this, you explained to me the work that has to be done by those by the maintenance and all of that. And what you said made a lot of sense. So I concede to that. But even though I want to hear them, you don't want to hear them? We know a lot of that portion election. Huh? When you came in there, you knew exactly what the situation was or is and is still is. You see these two major parties? The B's and the D's? I would like to be rid of them. Both of them. Because one of them telling you, I ain't going to give you a ball of rice and black eyes. And that's when I tell you that. I give you black eyes and rice. And the foolish people, and they made apologies for them for it all the time, not realizing it's just the way it's worded. That's all it is, you know.
Well, my friend.
You know that the hard.
My friend, you deserve what you get for the standards you set. So if you set certain standards and you then get them, you can't ask for anything less. But I got to go.
Yeah, you know what I want?
Uh-huh.
I hope that Lynette is going to pull it off. And I hope she get all the candidates. I mean, they said, I'll be all the dang it. How do you know they're going to turn out the same way? I hear pretty work and talking about third parties. I'm going to make it. Mm-hmm. Barr was a third party. And there's a lot of positive history involved with it till this group came along, destroy everything.
All right, sir.
But we have to do something. We can't go on with this.
All right, sir. You've made your point. We gotta go. We go to the next call. We've got about six calls there.